Paramahamsa Parivraja Gacharya Asatara Sadashri Srimadas Divine Grace Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mahi Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesa Sinyavali Paskachade Satarane. Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya This is July 19th, 2011. Class via Skype and phone from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. This is a description of Dwarkapuri, text 12. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The city of Dwarkapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers all over. Purport. Perfection of human civilization is made possible by utilizing the gifts of nature in their own way. As we find herewith in the description of its opulence, Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens and fruit orchards, along with reservoirs of water and growing lotuses. There is no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are the necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. The propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there, even in the heart of modern civilized man. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential quarters in a place where there are such naturally beautiful gardens and reservoirs of water. But they leave the common men to reside in congested areas without parks and gardens. Herein, of course, we find a different description of the city of Dwarka. It is understood that the whole dhamma, or residential quarter, was surrounded by such gardens and parks with reservoirs of water where lotuses grew. It is understood that all the people depended on nature's gifts of fruits and flowers without industrial enterprises promoting filthy huts and slums for residential quarters. Advancement of civilization is estimated not on the growth of mills and factories to deteriorate the finer instincts of the human being, but on developing the potent spiritual instincts of human beings and giving them a chance to go back to Godhead. Development of factories and mills is called ugra karma, or pungent activities. And such activities deteriorate the finer sentiments of the human being and society to form a dungeon of demons. We find herein the mention of pious trees, which produce seasonal flowers and fruits. The impious trees are useless jungles only, and they can only be used to supply fuels. In the modern civilization, such impious trees are planted on the sides of roads. Human energy should be properly utilized in developing the finer senses for spiritual understanding, in which lies the solution of life. Fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers and cows giving sufficient milk and butter are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. As against this, the dungeons of mines, factories, and workshops develop demoniac propensities in the working class. The vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class, and consequently there are severe clashes between them in so many ways. The description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal of human civilization. Sarvatu sarva bibhava punya vriksha lata shamai udyano pavanara mair vritta padma kara shriyam. The city of Dwarkapuri, which was filled with the opulences of all seasons, there were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers all over. So I grew up in one of these ugra karma metropolises of the modern civilization. I grew up in New York City in Manhattan. Of course, where I grew up in New York, my parents were very well-to-do, and I grew up right across from a park, right across from Central Park. Grew up on Central Park West. And we could cross the street, and there were trees. Of course, they were all impious trees. I don't remember any trees in New York having fruits. Perhaps some of them had some flowers. But they were impious trees, but there were reservoirs of water and gardens of flowers, and in the water were playing at least ducks. I don't remember if there were any swans, but there were certainly ducks and big grassy areas. Later on, when I got a little older, we moved to northern Jersey, where we also lived by a lake. We lived on Lakeshore Drive, right on a man-made lake that also had some parks and gardens. But we would regularly drive into the city. And here it says Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens. And it says, Prabhupada says here, there's no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are the necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. So we would see this driving from New Jersey into New York, which we would do, oh, at least once a week, often as much as three times a week. And when we drive into the city of New York, surrounding the city, instead of parks and gardens, there were landfills. So the garbage from the city and from the surrounding areas were all dumped in these landfills. And the smell was so bad. I remember especially once we'd get to Secaucus, New Jersey, was kind of a joke among us. You'd have to close the windows. And even then, the stench would somehow or other come into the car, and you could hardly breathe. It was overwhelming. And within the landfills, there were these big oil tanks of petroleum. You know, these huge cylinders of petroleum that were supplying the needs of the city. And the whole landscape was bleak. Something like the photographs that they so-called bring back from the moon. You know, just nothing growing, nothing green, everything stinking, and Prabhupada says here, filthy and dirty. And then we cross, of course we're on the highway with all of the cars spewing out the pollution, and then as you cross into the city, the first thing that we would see was the slaughterhouses. Prabhupada mentions here, right? Supported mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses. So we would see the trucks full of the animals, either the animals coming to slaughter or the animals that have been slaughtered. It was interesting that on the sides of the trucks, they would usually have stylized pictures or cartoon pictures of happy dancing animals. So on the side of the truck, there's this happy dancing pig cartoon, and inside the truck, there's the dead bodies of the pigs who died in agony. And as we'd enter into the city, you'd see people there in clothes covered with blood, literally. And on their storefronts would again be paintings of happy animals, happy dancing animals. And you see them receiving all this dead flesh while everyone's covered in blood. And then there's a small section of the city, the section where I had lived in the city, which is reasonably opulent and full of nature, full of trees and lakes and gardens. But that's a very small portion of the city. Most of the city's not like that. So the majority of the people are living in congested areas where there's crime, as Prabhupada says, there are filthy huts, filth and garbage everywhere, smells of urine on the street where the bums are urinating on the sidewalks, and a horrible, horrible situation. And instead of Sarva Ritta, Sarva Vibhava, instead of every season showing its opulence, the seasons all show their negative qualities. So in the summer, the concrete is radiating back the heat, increasing the heat, and there's hardly any shade. In the winter, the snow turns black within an hour from the exhaust of all the cars and simply creates this black slush in the gutters. So this is our modern society. And of course, New York, frankly, is one of the nicer cities. I've visited many cities in the world, and most of them are not even that nice. Especially if you go, I remember when I was in Moscow, the devotees took me to what they said was the most opulent mall. They took me there because we had a little restaurant there, and it looked like a warehouse. Horrible. What to speak of. You go to China, and in the cities of China, there's so much pollution that you literally cannot see the sky. You know how in a very hazy, foggy day, there's kind of like this mist hanging, and it looks like the sky has become lower. So it's like that in China. Even I went out in about 2 or 3 hours by train into the country around Shanghai, and it didn't get any better, even out in the country. And I thought, you know, the people living in this place, they don't even know what color the sky is. Within a few days, I was having severe respiratory breathing problems from the air. Right? And then what to speak of India? You know, you go to India and filth and slums is practically the norm, especially in northern India. Our people are living in congestion and filth practically beyond comprehension. And even the wealthy sections of the society, if they're living in the cities, immediately outside their door is also filth. Even the parks and the gardens have become filthy. So this is our modern progress, right? We are told growing up in school that human beings have only become civilized in the last 2,000 years, and that our civilization and our progress results in these wonderful places of human habitation. And Prabhupada says here that the propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there even in the heart of modern civilized man. So we still have some yearning. Why? I mean, it's interesting. Prabhupada three times here says something. He uses different words each time. The finer instincts of the human being, finer sentiments of the human being, and then he says finer tissues of the human being. Instincts, sentiments, and tissues. So he's talking about our natural inclinations, our natural instincts. Instinct is something you don't have to learn. It's just part of you. Just like there are so many animals, they know how to navigate. The Arctic tern? It flies over the ocean, it can navigate. Or even more amazing is the monarch butterfly, where the fourth generation of monarch butterflies, it migrates. Now, how does it learn that? The other three successive generations, they are born and they're hatched and they grow up and they die without ever migrating. And somehow the fourth generation knows with the change of seasons, it's time to migrate, or the spider building its web. So many things. Instinct. So what is the finer instinct of the human being? Or the Prabhupada next uses the finer sentiments. Sentiment, generally the word sentiment is a negative one, meaning senses and mind. But here it means the feelings. There's some country I go to in the world where whenever I use the word emotion, they translate it to sentiment. So sentiment, one's feelings, one's emotions, one's desires, and then even finer tissues. Prabhupada's talking here even about the body. So the natural state of our drives, our instincts, our sentiment, and even our body is a condition of cleanliness and beauty and harmony and opulence. Vibhava. Vibhava. Shriyam. Beauty. That is actually our natural state. That Prabhupada uses the word nature here over and over and over again. Right? What is the actual condition? And we're longing for this natural beauty, even in our modern civilization. It's not that it can be completely destroyed. Even the most demoniac and degraded person, there's still some yearning, some instinct that's leading us towards beauty and harmony. It's leading us towards purity. As I mentioned before, there's studies done on five universal moral principles that exist in all cultures and in all societies in different ways and different proportions. And one of them is purity, an inclination towards purity. I mean, biologically, one can understand this, that things that are impure cause us disease. Things that are pure give us health, right? The finer tissues of the human, developing the finer tissues of the human body. So this is something that everyone is longing for. Now, it's very interesting that we see Prabhupada speaking here about how a filthy, industrialized, slaughterhouse society degrades. What does he use the word here? They deteriorate our natural and finer instincts, our natural and finer sentiments, and even the natural finer tissues of our body. So if we're in a wrong environment, if we're in an unnatural environment, it starts to deteriorate even our instincts. And we see this in modern society with the prevalence of abortion. So the mother instinct is very strong in the female. It's actually there by chemicals. The desire to have children, the desire to nurture children and take care of children, it's an instinct of the female. A desire to produce children and protect them is an instinct of the male. To protect a woman. This is all instinctive. It's innate within our body. Not just within our psychology, but within our body. And we see that in the Ugra Karma, as Prabhupada says here, the pungent activities, interesting, so much poetry in this purport. I mean, we can analyze this purport as a whole lesson in poetry. The dungeon of demons, the pungent activities, amazing, the parallel construction with finer instincts, finer sentiment, finer tissues. Anyway, so when we're in a bad environment, even our instincts become deteriorated, so that people are abusing their children and killing their children. That the mother, who normally has the instinct of protecting the child in the womb, is killing the child in the womb. The men who have the natural instinct to shelter and protect a woman, they're abusing the women, they're abandoning the women. It's the people who have the government officials who have a natural instinct to protect the citizens are exploiting the citizens. Here Prabhupada says the vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class. The natural instinct of a human being to protect turns instead, it deteriorates, as Prabhupada says here, into exploitation. Now there's a cycle that goes on here. That if we lower our consciousness, karana guna sangasya, sadasad janmayoni shu. So according to how we associate with the modes of nature, we become deteriorated and we come down to the mode of ignorance. Then we produce living situations that are in the mode of ignorance, and those living situations then deteriorate our natural spiritual situation. As it deteriorates our internal situation, our body, our sentiments, our instincts, then we produce an external environment that is more degraded. The external environment then deteriorates us further. So if it starts with internal consciousness, when my internal consciousness is degraded, I am attracted to an external environment that further deteriorates me. This cycle is also explained very nicely by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he talks about the different stages of sin. There's the bija, the seed stage, and then the unmanifested, and gradually it fructifies, produces fruit, produces the parabdha karma, the body that we're in, our karma, our situation, our environment. But what else does it produce? It produces an additional bija. We can all understand this with a plant. You plant a seed. The seed gradually, first it's growing under the ground, or first the seed is not growing at all. We went to an art project thing here in Hilo. There's a children's toy store, which once a month, now I think it's twice a month, they do a free art project for young children. They supply everything for free. They must cost them $200 to $500 every time they do it. Anyway, one time we went, the leader was teaching our children how to create a musical instrument. That we used a cardboard tube and decorated it, and they filled it with popcorn. So the children brought them back, and of course the little children ended up breaking them, intentionally or unintentionally. And the little bits of popcorn got all over the place. And the other day when I was in the driveway, I saw, oh, here's some seeds sprouting in the driveway. You know, here in Hilo, it rains a lot. So even on the driveway, in the little crevices of the asphalt, there was a seed sprouting. Oh, it's a popcorn seed. So the popcorn had fallen out one of the children's art projects, and it was starting to sprout. And I was thinking, you know, I don't normally think about popcorn sprouting. Or I remember when Vishakha was writing an article about rice in Back to Godhead and talking about how no scientist could ever create a grain of rice. And I thought, yeah, you know, rice is a seed. If you took a whole grain of rice and you put it in water, it would start to sprout. So these are, normally they're dormant. When we bring the popcorn into our house or the rice into our house, it's not growing. It's sleeping. it's not manifesting any kind of life. But you put it in the right conditions. You give it some water, and it starts sprouting. And of course, normally it starts sprouting underground. The first sprouting is not visible. And eventually the little shoot goes up above the ground and becomes visible. And eventually it produces a plant. And what does the plant produce? Everybody knows, ultimately, more seeds. More seeds. So sinful activity is exactly like that. First, there's the seed of sin. The seed of sin is envy. Envy. Or as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his commentary on 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, weakness of heart. I want to be the Lord. The same thing. I'm envious of Krishna. I want to be the Lord, which makes me envious of everyone else. I'm envious of Krishna's opulence, his vibhav. This word vibhav, it really struck me in this verse, because vibhav is one of the bhavs that make up rasa. There's our sthai bhav, vibhav, anubhav, vyavichari bhav, sattvika bhav. The essence of rasa, or our relationship with Krishna, it starts actually with this vibhav. Vibhav has the ashraya, vishaya. It has Krishna as the Krishna and the devotees are the shelter of this love. And then there's the udipans. The udipans are what brings out our love. Krishna's playing his flute, his softness, his beauty, his pastimes, so many things that induce the living entity to feel love for Krishna. So this is the ultimate vibhav, the ultimate opulence. Krishna, the devotees, and all of Krishna's names, forms, qualities, and pastimes, which for the pure soul brings out the love, brings out the expressions of love, like we were reading before, the residents of Dwarka running with presence, that's anubhav, brings out the involuntary expressions of love, the gadgada, gira, that's the sattvic above, and brings out one's relationships, one's sthai bhav. Now, Krishna is my lover, Krishna is my this, Krishna is my that. And Dwarka is full of these vibhavs. It's full of these impetuses for love. But the seed of sinful life is that instead of these vibhavs being an impetus for love, they become an impetus for envy. Just like we were discussing the other day, how when the demons see Krishna, they see his beauty, they see his opulence, everything. They see his devotees. They appreciate even. But they say, let me destroy them. Let me kill them. Let me be the Lord of all opulence. So this is the original seed. And as this seed sprouts, and how does it sprout? Karana guna sangasya. It sprouts by the influence of the modes of material nature. And it produces a tree with fruits. What are the fruits of this tree? The particular body that we have, the particular environment that we are living in, all of the aspects of our life, those are the fruits of the tree of our karma. And these again produce seeds. These produce further sinful desires which lead us to another body. So the seed produces a tree, which produces seeds, which produces a tree or a plant, which produces seeds. So in the same way, here Prabhupada's talking about internal and external. So our internal consciousness produces an external environment, and that external environment affects our consciousness, which then produces another external environment. So here Prabhupada's saying that an external environment that is filthy, that is industrialized, that is based on the violence of slaughterhouses, of mills and factories, of exploitation, let me live in a nice place while you live in the slums, that this has the effect on our consciousness of deteriorating our sentiments, our finer tissues, and our finer instincts. Whereas here we see, by contrast, in Dwarka, because all the residents there actually have love for Krishna. They don't have any envy. Therefore, they are sharing in the opulence of the Lord. Krishna also has no envy. Not like we can contrast what Prabhupada is describing here, Right? He says the vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class. So Krishna's not flourishing at the cost of his devotees. It's not that Krishna has great opulence and all of his devotees are living in the slums. No. Krishna's sharing his opulence with the devotees. And the opulence that Krishna is sharing with the devotees acts as an impetus, as an udipan, to having them have more love for Krishna. It's not that they see Krishna's opulence and think, let me take it away from him, or let me enjoy it separate from him. It increases their love, which then increases the external opulence. And this is all Prabhupada using the word nature. This is our nature. Is to live like this. This is our natural environment. This is our home, to be like this. So if we want to have an environment that best suits our Krishna consciousness, we have to start actually with our consciousness. We have to start with the seed. Many times devotees say, all right, let me first engineer my environment to promote and nourish my spiritual consciousness. And they put a lot of effort into their externals. Now, certainly our external environment is important. There are certain purports where Prabhupada says it's essential. But you know what? You won't be able to maintain an external environment unless you first work on your consciousness in the environment that you have. First you have to work on the seed. As you work on the seed, a new tree naturally grows. And we see, therefore, that even in the midst of these modern metropolises, even in the midst of the modern filth and slaughterhouses, devotees are able to produce mini dwarkas and mini vrindavans. I'm thinking of one of my favorite places, which is the Soho Temple in London. So if any of you listening to this class have ever been there, I hope you'll be able to understand my description. So when you go to London, London is very much like New York. My apologies to any Britishers who are offended by that. But anyway, it's very much like New York, except the buildings are shorter and the streets are narrower and the spelling's a little different and the street signs are harder to read because they're not all in regular places. You can see my bias towards New York here. But anyway, very, very similar in both its opulence and its degradation. So the Soho Street Temple is right off of Oxford Street, which is one of the main streets right in the heart of central London, where all the tourists go and the double-decker red buses and all of the different shops that people are going on. And when you turn onto Soho Street, you do come to a little park called Soho Square. It's just like a square block, no water there. No reservoirs of water with lotus flowers, and no pious trees, no punya vriksha, only impious trees. But still it is a park with some trees. But generally in the city you see filth and degradation, and even in the park, practically speaking, none of the devotees want to chant japa in that park because illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling are the prevalent activities there. And when you stay in the temple there, on the street, people are making noise until maybe an hour before Mangal Arati. Drunken people walking on the street, people engaging in illicit sex literally right on the street. It's pretty horrible. It's really, the whole area there exemplifies what Srila Prabhupada is speaking about in this purport. But, you know, when you walk into the door of the Soho Street Temple, you're not in London anymore. You're really in the spiritual world. The devotees have created an environment there. Sri Sri Radha London Ishwar, who are the first Radha Krishna deities who appeared in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that Krishna personally kidnapped them. Prabhupada, rather, personally kidnapped Radha London Ishwar. Wonderful, wonderful story. But anyway, they are installed there with Jagannath Balaram Subhadra and Gorni Thai. And you forget that you're in London. Practically speaking, you're not in London. Of course, it's explained that the devotee who carries Krishna in their heart, wherever they go is a dham, wherever they go is a tirtha. They're not dependent, as Krishna said, they're not dependent on auspicious or inauspicious things are on the ordinary course of events. So when the devotee starts changing their consciousness, then their external environment naturally changes, which also affects their consciousness. So how do we do this? First of all, what we should not do. What we should not do is blame our external environment, or especially the people in our external environment, for our lack of Krishna consciousness. Although Srila Prabhupada is very clearly saying here that a negative external environment will deteriorate our sentiments, our instincts, and even our body. Still, we should understand that our external environment is simply the fruit of the seeds that we have sown. Our external environment, our body, the people with whom we're associating, the place where we're born and grew up, the place where we live, everything. These are the fruits of our own actions. We cannot blame anybody else. We cannot say, if my husband treated me better, then I'd be more Krishna conscious. If my guru treated me better, then I'd be more Krishna conscious. If ISKCON was different, then I'd be more Krishna conscious. Oh, we simply have to take it that whatever situation we're in is the fruits of our own seeds. The first thing that we do then is creating a new seed. Creating a new seed, just like the scientists in the laboratory, they're able to, with their study of genetics, they can produce new kinds of plants. So what we want is to get back to our original seed, what is natural, the finer things, the more beautiful things, who we really are. We don't want to do something that's artificial. We want to do something that's natural and authentic. So we work on our own consciousness, and particularly we work on the core, which is our envy. Now, how do we do this? First of all, we work at giving up our envy of Krishna. Anya bilasita sunyam jnana karma vanavritam anukulenu Krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama. Anukulenu Krishna anushilanam. That we execute devotional service to make Krishna happy. Of course, we will also be happy. Aramai, Rama means happiness. And Prabhupada's translating it as pleasure gardens and beautiful parks, places of pleasure. So certainly, serving Krishna is full of pleasure. Susukam kartam avyaya. Keval ananda kanda. Without a doubt, serving Krishna is full of pleasure. Anandam buddhivardhanam. But that should not be the purpose of our service. Not that we deny our pleasure in service. That's not going to make Krishna happy. Krishna's not going to be happy if we try to repress the natural happiness we get from serving him. That's not what he's looking for. Working only for Krishna's pleasure doesn't mean artificially denying my own pleasure. But it means not being a thief and a rapist. A thief and a rapist, they are trying to take something from you that you are unwilling to give. That's not a loving exchange. So we want to have our service to Guru, our service to devotees, our service to Krishna be free from envy. Be free from the desire to take. Not that I'm serving Krishna so he's going to give me pleasure. Not that I'm serving Guru so Guru will do this for me. Or I'm serving the devotees so they'll do this for me. I'm serving to make them happy. And when they reciprocate by giving me happiness, I relish that as a way of being grateful. So that is the primary way in which we give up our envy. I chant the Hare Krishna mantra to please Krishna. I chant my Gayatri to please Krishna. I serve Krishna in his archa form to please him. I give him food to please him. I relish the prasadam he gives me to please him. I relish whatever prasadam he gives me, food, clothing, home, friends, to please him. And then how do I deal with others? This is a very important instruction of Narada to Dhruva. How to give up this envy. He says, when we meet others, they are in three categories. They are inferior to us, they are equal to us, or they are superior to us. Of course, a very envious person thinks that everyone is inferior, just like Duryodhan. Duryodhan thought that he was superior to everyone, and Yudhisthira thought that he was inferior to everyone. But at least by externals, people are inferior, equal, or greater than us. People are older than us or younger than us or the same age. They have more money or the same or less than we do, more or the same or less education, and so forth. So generally, when we meet somebody who is inferior to us, we try to exploit that advantage, as Prabhupada's talking about here. The vested interest flourish at the cost of the working class. So generally, when we meet someone who's inferior to us, we try to flourish at their cost. We try to use them. We try to exploit them. So instead of doing that, that's the envious way. The non-envious way is we try to help them. We give them good instruction. We give them kindness. We give them compassion. Why we understand that I have also been in that position, perhaps earlier in this life or in other lifetimes, and this person is really no different from me in essence. Pandita Samadarshinaha, we are all the same. And just due to some bad choices or due to the influence of time, they appear to be at this particular time in a lower situation. Just like the Pandavas, when they were in their year of exile, they were living as servants. Although Maharaj Yudhisthira had been the emperor, he had performed the Rajasuya Jagya. He was the emperor of the world. And now he was a servant. And Draupadi was the empress. And now she was a hairdresser. So this happens. This happens. It can happen to us also. We should not be proud, thinking, oh, I'm so much better than this person. In one instant, we can become at their level or lower. In one instant, due to the twists and turns of fate. Therefore, instead of using our temporary situation to overlord, we use our temporary situation to help, to bring the person up. This is non-enviousness, right? Envy is, I want other people to be good, but not quite as good as me. Yeah, I want other people to have slightly less talent, slightly less riches, slightly less whatever. I wouldn't be willing to have everybody be as good or better than I am. So non-envious, those who are lower than me, I want to help pull them up to my level or higher. I'm happy when they even go above me. And we see this a little bit with parents and children, where, you know, the parents never finish the third level of schooling and they are happy and they sacrifice so that their child goes to university. Then when we meet someone who's equal to us, the envious tendency is to brag. That's the envious tendency. Oh, how much money do I have? How much education do I have? What wonderful thing did I do? To start spouting our own glories. That's the envious thing to do. Just see how wonderful I am. To try to push the other person to be lower. The non-envious thing to do is just to have friendship. What does friendship mean? Appreciating one another, doing things together. And when we see someone who's superior to us, the envious tendency is to criticize them. Right? To think, oh, they don't really deserve what they have. Secretly, they must be doing so many bad things. You know, pretty soon they're going to fall from their position, or to try to take it from them in some way. Somehow to find fault with them. And the non-envious, or to say, why don't I have that? Oh, this person has so much spiritual advancement. Why don't I have it? This person has so much money. Why not me? This person has such good health. Why not me? The non-envious thing is to be jolly. Prabhupada uses the word jolly in that purport. Oh, how wonderful. This person has such good health. How wonderful that Krishna showered his grace on this person and they have so much more spiritual advancement than I do. To be happy at their happiness. If we start doing that, if we start serving Krishna, Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam, for his happiness in a way that's pleasing to him, if we are serving the Guru in a way that pleases the Guru rather than pleases ourselves, if we are trying to make others happy, if our dealings with other people are non-envious, if we try to bring up those who are less, are friendly with those who are equal and are jolly at the opulence of those who are greater. And then another tree fructifies. And then there's another fruit, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compares the growing of bhakti. Now you have the seed of bhakti that grows into a fruit of love. of love, a sweet fruit of love. And what does that fruit of love manifest? It manifests everything that's finer and beautiful and more natural. It manifests our original spiritual form, our original service, our original relationships, and it also manifests the Dham. Even in this world, it will manifest the Dham within our heart. So that we will be a walking Dham. And even in the slums of Delhi, we will feel ourselves in the beautiful situation of Vrindavan. And our external environment, our seeming external environment, will not degrade us. Rather, we will uplift our environment. So when we understand how non-envious Krishna is, how much he wants to share his opulences with his devotees, we can come to love him and also give up our envy, which collectively has produced this horrible, horrible modern civilization. Such a horrible civilization. I remember when I was 16, I was associated with one youth group, YMHA, where we all took a bicycle trip to the western part of Canada. So first we flew to Montreal, then we all went by train to British Columbia, where they had bicycles waiting for us, which really annoyed me because I had a great 10-speed bike at home, and I got there and it was just this crummy 3-speeder. But anyway, so we were going through the Rocky Mountains in the western part of Canada, and it's interesting, you know, here it says Sarva Ritu Sarva Vibhava, the opulence of all seasons. Like right now I'm in Hawaii, where we have tropical opulence. You know, palm trees, coconut trees, and all tropical flowers, and the turquoise of the ocean. But I remember just a few years ago, I was visiting some friends of mine in Vancouver Island, which is also Western Canada. That's another kind of opulence. The snow-covered mountains and the pines. Anyway, so we were in that kind of opulence, just beautiful. A very different beauty than we find here in Hawaii, but incredible, incredible beauty. And the first thing that I noticed, the first thing that struck me and that never failed to move me emotionally the whole month we were there, was that I could drink the water. You come upon a stream, you come upon a river. We went to Lake Louise. One devotee friend of mine is just right now visiting there. She was sending some photographs of herself by Lake Louise. It's a glacial lake formed from a melting glacier. And you can drink the water. That was so astonishing to me. Having grown up in New York City and northern New Jersey, that you could find a body of water, a lake or a river or a stream, and drink it. I mean, I could hardly believe it. I was so trained by my parents that if you find some natural water, there's no question of drinking it. You have to only drink the water that's gone through the so-called purification of the modern industrial society. That every time I drank that water in British Columbia, I was astonished. I was just overwhelmed. To this day, 40 years later, I continue to be astonished that I could drink that water. How rare is it now? So even in this horrible Ugra Karma life where you can't drink the water anymore, now, people now carry around their own water. Bhakti Chu Swami said maybe someday we'll carry around our own air. Everybody will buy air canisters. So even in this society, we can revive our Krishna consciousness if we give up our envy. And that is really the purpose of all of our sadhana bhakti, all of our spiritual practices. All of our spiritual practices is to get to this root, to get to this weakness of heart. Prabhupada explained so nicely in the last purport of, I think it's the last purport of the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he's paraphrasing Bhaktivinoda. Our first weakness of heart is this envy of the Lord, this desire to be, instead of to be in harmony with material nature, to be the Lord of material nature. And the second weakness of heart is becoming attached to our body, our possessions, and so much, so forth. We become attached to the very fruits of our envy. How sad. How sad. We get this seed of envy, we plant it, and then we become attached to the fruits and the forthcoming seeds, although they are deteriorating us in body and mind. So we can make a determination. We can make a determination that today, now, I am going to deal with superiors with jolliness, with equals, with friendship, with those lower, with compassion, and I will try to do my service to make Krishna happy. Relishing the happiness I feel at making Krishna happy, undoubtedly. Not denying that. But my motive should be Krishna's happiness, serving Krishna as he desires. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.